Welcome to session number 3 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program. I'm Mark David, founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. So glad to be back with you here. The title of today's session is The Science and Psychology of Emotional Eating. So we'll be exploring a more complete understanding of the mechanisms of emotional eating. And we'll do this by taking a deeper dive into the science and psychology of emotional eating. And with this deeper understanding, you will have more key insights and more practices to help you heal and transform emotional eating, because that's what this is all about. To me, we really can't fully understand any challenge with food and body unless we can have an elegant blend of both science and psychology. You know, so many people think nutrition alone will solve their challenges with emotional eating, binge eating, overeating, body image, or weight. But really, until we understand the mind, the heart, and the soul of who we are as eaters, we might never find the freedom that we're seeking. On a personal note, I came to this realization at a pretty young age. By my early 20s, I had read just about every popular book and textbook on nutrition. Back in the 80s, you could do that. I studied nutrition in college and graduate school. I saw clients very early on in my career. And I soon realized that even though I can tell my clients what to eat and what not to eat, they would admit that they just couldn't follow simple guidelines. And this is despite their high level of education and motivation. So something unseen was in the way. And I quickly deduced that I needed to study eating psychology. And the problem was, I soon discovered there wasn't any place to learn it back then. Yes, I could study eating disorders, but that represented only a few percent of the population. And I was thinking, well, what about the other 96, 97% of us who are dealing with weight challenge, body image issues, overeating, binge eating, emotional eating, constant food worry, endless dieting, all of that? So there was no book I could read, no course I could take. So I found a graduate program in California. It was at Sonoma State University. They gave me a scholarship to do an independent study in eating psychology, and I was absolutely thrilled. So the first thing I did when I got there was I put an ad in the local paper. Graduate student leading 8-week eating psychology support group, I called it. And I gave the dates and the location, but I foolishly didn't give a phone number. So I actually had no idea if anybody would even show up. Well, 18 people came. They ranged in age from 18 to 65 years old. 3 were being treated for anorexia. 5 were struggling with bulimia. About 7 people were just trying to lose some weight, anywhere from 20 to 40 pounds each. 2 of the participants were extremely obese. They each wanted to lose over 150 pounds. One of the participants was a model who had what many would consider sort of the classic, perfect, ideal body and looks, and she was in constant fear of gaining weight. And there was one man in the group, and he was in the bulimic section. So I was with what was, for me, the most fascinating group of people on earth, all sizes, all shapes, weights, ages, and backgrounds. We met one time a week for the first 4 or 5 weeks, so it was about up to a halfway point, the room would be very tense. And it was very clear, the anorexic women didn't like the obese women. The obese women didn't like the anorexic ones. The women who just wanted to lose some weight, they befriended only each other. Most people were pretty curious about the one man in the group, and everyone seemed to look at the model with disdain. No one would speak to her. They just couldn't understand why she was there. People would ask me after class what she's doing there. So the 8-week group ended up running for almost a year. And that's because people eventually fell in love with each other. We all learned from each other. People slowly began to understand each participant's unique, beautiful, and difficult story. They all found their common ground and their shared humanity. I could say so much more about that. I received the gift of learning on the job. I learned, in part, that good nutrition was good, it was important, but it was not enough to help people find the answers that they were seeking. I learned that when we do a deeper dive into our own story, our beliefs, our mind, our emotional world, our inner voices or archetypes, our psychology, essentially, magic can happen. And we're going to unfold that more and more as we go along. So let's do a quick recap and then dive into this week's new discoveries. So recap. First, recall our definition of emotional eating. Emotional eating is using food to regulate our emotions. It's a behavior. This definition is profound in its simplicity. Emotional regulation is an ongoing practice that we as human beings must do, agree to it or not, like it or not. It's a requirement for being alive on planet Earth. We're constantly experiencing life in so many different ways, and that means we have an ongoing flow of emotions. Many of the emotions we experience are pleasing to us, such as pleasure, happiness, fun, excitement, joy, love, connection, etc. Many of the emotions we experience in life are uncomfortable ones. You know this: pain, stress, anxiety, fear, anger, rage, disappointment, boredom, grief, depression, abandonment, trauma, lots more. So our task from a young age is to learn how to deal with unwanted emotions and discomfort in the most skillful and effective and healthy ways. Recall our example of the tiny and developing infant. You and I were that infant. At such a young age, we cannot communicate our needs very well. We don't have language. We can't regulate our own physical and emotional needs because that's the job of our parents. That's the job of the big people around us. But one thing every infant instinctively and genetically knows is that anytime there's discomfort or upset or hunger, you cry. You express that you feel bad. And the moment that infant receives mama and the breast, mama and the bottle, it relaxes. It finds peace. It's being held, touched, loved, soothed, sung to, and fed all at once. That's bliss for an infant. So hardwired into the infant's nervous system, hardwired into our nervous system, is this memory, this deep memory: feel bad, eat food, feel better. And this has been going on in the human species for eons of time, my friends. It's part of our biology. It's ingrained in our psyche, in our soul, in our emotional library. Feel bad, eat food, feel better. So food is like home base for us. It becomes an actual and reliable key source of comfort. Let's state this in a different way. All creatures in existence are designed at the most primitive and fundamental level of their biology to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So whether we're talking about a single-celled organism, a bacteria, whether we're talking about a lizard, a dog, a human, every living thing is engaged in the constant experience of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. So in many ways, pleasure enhancement and pain reduction drives just about all of our behaviors and actions. Everything you do throughout the day can potentially be interpreted as seeking comfort or pleasure and avoiding pain, i.e. unwanted experiences or emotions. It's just how we're built, and it's smart. So when you eat, for example, you are seeking the pleasure of food and avoiding the pain of hunger. That's eating at the most primitive level. Seeking the pleasure of food and avoiding the pain of hunger. When we emotionally eat, we're seeking the pleasure of food and avoiding the pain of unwanted emotions. Pleasure chemistry and pleasure physiology is hardwired into our brain, our nervous system, and we have pleasure receptors throughout our body. The same goes for pain. So in many ways, the human experience, it's an ongoing dance of looking for that which makes me feel good while avoiding that which is painful and is a threat to my survival or my happiness. Now, there's an aspect about our built-in biological urge to seek pleasure that's very important when it comes to understanding and transforming emotional eating. And that's where we're diving into new material right now. So there's an aspect of our biology, of our urge to seek pleasure, that's super important when it comes to understanding emotional eating. Specifically, I'm talking about the phenomenon, the psychological phenomenon called instant gratification. Essentially, instant gratification is best defined, here's a simple definition, I want what I want when I want it. That's instant gratification. Wondering right now if you can relate to this voice. The part of you that doesn't care about future consequences, the part of you that simply demands instant reward. I want what I want when I want it. So recall our brief conversations that we had about the archetypes, the different voices within us. The voice of instant gratification tends to belong to the child or the teenager or a little bit of the rebel within us. So in a way, it's a less evolved, less mature, less wise, less worldly or experienced voice. And as fate would have it, and as I've seen over the years, many, many humans get a little stuck, or a lot stuck, when it comes to our built-in desire that's hardwired into your system for instant gratification. And this is not only true as it relates to food, but also with other parts of life as well. So again, the need, so understand that these things are rooted in the brilliance of our biology and psychology. So the need for instant gratification, which is important to have that need, it lives in the domain of the child within us, the young person within us, the rebel within us. It's that innocent and often bratty little voice that has zero interest in what's going to happen in the future if I do this thing now. I mean, think about it for a moment. You wouldn't try to tell a four-year-old that, you know, four-year-old, you can't eat ice cream at every meal, because that's what a lot of four-year-olds want. You can't eat ice cream at every meal because it will adversely impact your metabolism. It will likely cause diabetes in the future. It's going to give you unwanted weight gain, potentially high cholesterol levels, potentially lead to high blood pressure and fatty liver disease. The kid's going to look at you like you're an alien. That's because the child has virtually no understanding of long-term consequences. It's not their job at that point. It's not how their nervous system has developed yet. So we come into this planet hardwired for instant gratification. And it is reasonable that we can consider food as the original instant gratification experience. Once again, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with instant gratification. It's a part of your natural development. When an infant's hungry, it wants its hunger satisfied right now. More to the point, everything with an infant is urgent and immediate. You parents know this. Aunts and uncles, you know this. Grandparents, you know this. Everything with an infant is urgent and immediate because as infants, we're incredibly vulnerable creatures. And every cry for help or every cry of discomfort must be attended to by the big people in our environment because actually something dangerous could be going on. It could be life-threatening. So we don't know. So the child does what it knows how to do. It can't speak in evolved language because it doesn't know language yet. It just screams its head off. So what happens when a toddler or a child or a teenager doesn't get instant gratification? Or an adult doesn't get instant gratification, what do? You know, we become pouty, annoyed, angry, demanding, impatient, irritated. So that's the children, and that's also the adults. If we're habituated to seek instant gratification, we as adults can easily become a little defiant and a little immature in our decision-making. And that's the challenge. As adults, you and I can readily convince ourselves that hey, if I can have instant gratification with food, then why not? Consequences be damned. I want what I want when I want it. So we are literally inviting, letting the child or the infant or the teenager or the rebel in us make our choices around food based on this just sort of wonderful sensation called, I want instant gratification. I want it all now. You know, I've had this experience so many times in my professional life that when I point out to a client or a student or a loved one that there's a part of them that demands instant gratification around food, oftentimes the person just immediately smiles and lights up. The kid in them can't help but feel a little busted, yet finds it to be an amusing experience because there's actually a part of us as adults, there's a part of us that loves instant gratification because it feels good. Of course you should love it. When you get instantly gratified by anything, it feels good. And when we realize that this is what we're doing with food, it actually brings us an odd kind of joy. So, you know, oftentimes seeing ourselves clearly is rather amusing. You're seeing the kid in you. There's something sweet about that. There's something endearing about that. Here's the important takeaway. Emotional eating, in many ways, is sort of the ultimate demand for instant gratification. I want this food, and I want it now. We don't even realize that this is what we're doing in the moment. It's an unconscious voice that's driving our eating choices and eating behaviors. It's a part of us making decisions that has no interest in future consequences. Now, again, I want to repeat this. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. On the contrary, it means that you're a human being who is doing the best strategies that you know in order to feel good, feel pleasure, and vanquish any unwanted emotions. And we are here today in this session, in this life, as an adult. If you emotionally eat, then you are here to learn to delay gratification, to envision the future benefits of letting go of gratification in this instant, to function with the mind leading the way, with your bigger awareness leading the way, with the light of consciousness leading the way. So we're learning to delay gratification. Welcome to planet Earth. We're here to learn. And seems like the lessons never stop. You know that. So that's what big girls and big boys do when it comes to instant gratification. At some point, you just can't have all the alcohol you want. You can't have all the ice cream you want. You can't have all the drugs you want. You can't have all the fun you want. You can't have all the days off you want, whatever it is. We are learning to delay gratification. It's called growing up. It's called maturing. It's called evolving. It's called tapping into our inner wisdom. So instant gratification has two distinct benefits. First, it gives us pleasure in the moment. And second, it helps us avoid any pain, i.e. uncomfortable emotions that we might be feeling. So all in all, instant gratification makes perfect sense as a psychological strategy, especially to the child or young person within you. But, of course you know this, it locks in the unwanted habit called emotional eating. And the need for instant gratification justifies our emotional eating, and it gives our emotional eating power and momentum. So the part of us that's wanting instant gratification, like, hey, I'm going to do this because I deserve this. I deserve instant gratification. I have a tough life. Got to do this. I got to do that. I got to listen to that. I got to follow all these rules. I have to follow all these food rules. Just give me the goodies now. So that voice is legitimate. We're fed up with all the rules. And your task is to retrain your brain, your mind, your nervous system with a new way of thinking. That's your task. Your task is to invoke the adult in you when making choices and decisions around food. Your task is to gradually remove the child in you from sitting at the head of the table when it comes to managing your eating experience. I hope that makes sense to you. So here's a great place to begin. It's a journaling exercise. I'd love for you to write down a list of all the ways and all the places that you look for instant gratification in your life. So look for all the ways and all the places that you look for instant gratification in your life. This, of course, means all the ways you might demand instant gratification when it comes to food. When do you tend to do this? Under what circumstances? Can you describe the personality of the part of you that's demanding instant gratification with food? How old is that part of you? Guess what age he or she is. What are your favorite foods to reach for when you're wanting instant gratification? I want the goodies now. How much do you need to eat to feel gratified in the moment? At what point after you finish eating do you begin to feel discomfort or upset or guilt, i.e. when does the instant gratification high wear off? How much time elapses? So this journaling exercise is all about you getting familiar with the details around instant gratification and emotional eating. It's about you gathering more data about yourself. It's about you bringing consciousness, curiosity, awareness, and light into a place where we usually go a little dark when you emotionally eat. Now, once you finish this journaling exercise, just notice if anything jumps out for you. Did you get any insights, any aha moments, any connections that you can make? And from there, here's your next task. Here's your assignment. Here's your practice. Whenever you're about to emotionally eat, I want you to ask yourself the question, who is eating in this moment? Who's eating? Which part of me is making the food choice? How old am I right now? Am I willing to invoke the adult in me at this moment and ask the question that we learned before, what else? What else can I do other than eat food in this moment to regulate my emotions? Now, for extra credit, make sure to journal about potential other areas in your life where you might be perhaps a little bit demanding instant gratification. For example, do you want instant gratification when it comes to money, when it comes to sexual pleasure, when it comes to your relationships, when it comes to what you want other people to do or not do, when it comes to drinking alcohol? Do you want instant gratification when it comes to losing weight, or having the perfect body or the perfect health, or your use of any recreational drugs? Are you secretly demanding that people in your life act or behave in a certain way that'll make you feel better about them? Are you insisting that others immediately know exactly how you feel and what you want? And if people don't instantly and secretly know exactly how you feel and what you want, then you're upset with them? Or are there certain situations or experiences where you just have to have things your way and you need to do it your way right now? So it's that urgent part of ourselves where I want exactly what I want when I want it. It's that demanding, sometimes could be a little bit of a tyrant voice in us. Reason why I'm asking you to see if there's connections between food and life is because there's connections between food and life oftentimes. Meaning, if we're demanding instant gratification when it comes to food, it's a good bet that we have that same strategy in other parts of our existence. The more we can see ourselves clearly here, the more we can support ourselves when it comes to emotional eating. That's because when you begin to notice and let go of instant gratification in any area of your life, it affects all the others. So, for example, as we learn to let go of instant gratification when it comes to weight loss, because a lot of people, they don't realize, like, I want to lose the weight like now, like yesterday. There's an inner demand that's pushing us. A lot of people are wanting the perfect body like now. I just have to have it now. So when you start to let go of it, we naturally find it easier to let go of instant gratification, particularly when it comes to eating, i.e. emotional eating. I want to tell you a story. I worked with a woman once. Let's call her Janine. She was 44 years old. She was gripped by emotional eating for over 25 years. Janine worked as an account manager for a tech company. She's a very organized person, very efficient. I found her to be a very sort of gentle person in her affect, a bit reserved. Janine, here's her story. She would sneak food while at work, meaning she didn't want anyone to see that she was essentially snacking on candy and chocolate much of the day. After work, she'd have dinner with her husband. And after the dinner, he would go off and get on his computer and she would eat ice cream and cookies. And, you know, once in a while he'd see it, but she just tried to do it in such a way that it didn't look like she was doing it after every dinner time. So essentially, Janine felt very ashamed of her emotional eating. She hadn't told anyone about it, and she definitely felt uncomfortable sharing about it with me. She was trying to be as logical as she could in her approach to overcoming emotional eating. She felt she just needed to have more willpower. I need to get more control over myself and just get my act together. So she felt that there was a getting her act together, because that's kind of what we're taught. And that's the strategies that make a lot of us successful in life. You power through something, you get control over something, your job, your tasks, whatever you need to do, your responsibilities, and then you achieve something. Doesn't work so well with food all the time. So additionally, she spoke to herself very harshly about her body and her eating. She commented to me just a number of times in our first few sessions about how her excessive her weight was, and how she needed to lose 20 pounds so she could be healthier. It's interesting. She just said, I need to lose this weight to be healthier, even though she had no health issues. Janine, I want to say, had the classic, I'm going to call this the good girl archetype. She was a people pleaser. She wanted everyone to like her and would look for any ways that she can get on people's good side while doing her best to avoid conflict. She kept remarking that she knows what she's supposed to eat and she just doesn't do it. And here's what was getting to her. She was completely confused as to why this was the case. Why can't she get control over this? That was her rainy question, like, what's wrong with me? So here's what's fascinating. At one point in the conversation, I asked her to give me some specific details about her favorite foods to emotionally eat. Like, what brands do you use? What flavors? Just give me all the details. And I asked it in a very inviting kind of way. So she started talking in details about the foods that she would emotionally eat the most. And I noticed as she was doing that, she had a big smile on her face for the first time in our session. So I pointed this out to her in a playful way. You know, this is the first time you've smiled. You're talking about all these bad foods that you're eating and you're all happy. And she smiled even more and we had a good laugh about it together. So I then suggested this to her. I said, I'm thinking that you spend so much time being sort of the good girl, and that's been a long time in your life, that there's a part of you that just doesn't want to follow any rules. So there's a part of you that's the good girl, and there's the part of you that just so doesn't want to be a good girl, doesn't want to follow any rules. There's a part of you just wants to be the bad girl, eat what you want, when you want it, consequences be damned. Now, when I said this, she absolutely lit up. And with a huge smile on her face, she acknowledged that this part of her was very pronounced and very active. And she said she just never really took the time to look at it so closely and to acknowledge it so clearly. So at that point in the conversation, I explained to her the concept of instant gratification as I've explained it to you. I talked about the rebel in her. I suggested that her emotional eating was all about this other part of her needing a voice. Was interesting. She explained to me how as a child, her mother had put her on a very strict diet to lose weight. And she didn't understand why. And she didn't like it. But she ended up feeling very ashamed of herself. And she would constantly sabotage her mother's efforts to diet her. She became a clever little girl. And she'd sneak food whenever she could and eat it with gusto. And the rest of the time, she'd act like a good girl. So I then suggested to her that, check this out, that a part of her was still living in her mother's house, so to speak, even though she doesn't live in her mother's house anymore. Part of you is still living in your mother's house, your parents' house. You're still functioning as that child, as that young teen who was rebelling against an unwanted diet that was placed upon you by a parent. And now these days, she's still playing out that drama. So a part of her is the parent or the adult in her who says, eat this, don't eat that. And a part of her is the kid who's rebelling against that and just wants instant gratification. And of course, the net result is she never truly gets where she wants to go, because both of these voices are at odds with each other. Janine also realized that her secret love of instant gratification with food was also mirrored in her life in other places. She would often overdo her wine consumption and feel absolutely terrible the next day. And she always knew this would happen. She'd do it anyways. And then she would feel even worse about herself because she knew what would happen. And there were things she admitted she would disregard and let slide at work because she just didn't want to do it. And small things that she just wouldn't be her usual responsible self in getting things done. This is all the voice of the rebel in her and just wanting the instant gratification of just doing what I want to do, eating what I want to eat, behaving how I want to behave. So our work together was all about practicing bringing forth the adult within her whenever she was choosing to eat. Her work was to notice the part of her that wants instant gratification, notice it, and train herself in the adult way of delayed gratification. Practice the what else strategy. What else can I do in this moment other than reach for food for my emotional regulation? So Jeanine was essentially learning to see all these parts of herself, all the voices or archetypes within her, and get them working in harmony together. This means learning to mature the younger voice within her that was demanding instant gratification. And I'm going to tell you, she was truly relieved to finally have a deeper understanding of herself and have a clear roadmap to follow. Less than 3 months, she was a new person, more grounded, more at peace. She was on a specific schedule of eating sweets twice per day. So she was able to let that be enough. She knew she was going to get what she wanted. Her emotional eating was about 90% less. So 90% cured, 90% gone for the first time in her adult life. And additionally, she let go of a tremendous amount of guilt and was now feeling empowered about her relationship with food. Just a beautiful story. So let's take some time now and discuss some of the science behind emotional eating. And a great place to begin with is the physiologic stress response. Let's define exactly what the stress response is. Over eons of time, humans developed a complex mechanism that helps us thrive in life-threatening situations. So our prime imperative as a species is to survive. Stress response, again, known as the fight-or-flight response, it's the state of sympathetic nervous system dominance. So when you're being chased by a lion's trying to eat you, the body has a series of brilliant responses that are designed to help you prevail. In a full-blown stress response, the lion wants to eat you. This is a real life or death situation. Your heart rate shoots up, your blood pressure shoots up. Blood is shunted away from your midsection. It's rerouted to your arms and legs for quick fighting or fleeing. Blood rushes to your head for quick thinking. Additionally, in a full-blown stress response, digestion and assimilation completely shuts down. That's because when you're running from the lion, you don't need to be digesting your pizza. You're being chased by a predator. All your metabolic energy wants to be rerouted into survival. What's more, when you're in a stress response, our appetite is deregulated. Because you don't need to worry about if you're hungry, if you're not hungry, if you should have chocolate, if you shouldn't have chocolate. You know, that's why a majority of people will feel increased hunger during stress. Some people feel decreased hunger. But the point is, it just deregulates our appetite because we don't need it. Here's another powerful fact about the physiologic fight or flight response. When we're experiencing stress every day, day in, day out, the kind that never seems to subside, we will over-secrete, overproduce more cortisol, that's the main stress hormone, as well as more insulin. These two hormones tend to track each other, and when they're secreted in excess, they'll tend to signal the body to store weight, store fat, not build muscle, just the opposite of what most people want. So essentially, the stress response is optimally designed to be a super efficient and effective physiochemical response for a few minutes. In other words, nature knows that when you're being chased by the lion, something's going to happen within a couple of minutes. So in those few minutes, you'll either escape the lion, you'll defeat the lion, or you'll be eaten. But again, when we have day in, day out stress, we hyperproduce stress hormones, hyperproduce cortisol, hyperproduce insulin, which readily creates the kind of physiology where we're being driven to store fat, we're being driven to gain weight or not lose it, and we're going to be in long-term appetite confusion, which for most people means an added layer of biologically driven hunger. That's what stress alone does. So, by the way, you know, stress is an interesting term because I don't know what most people think when they think of stress, but stress can mean anxiety, fear, upset. Stress can mean confusion. Stress can mean anger. Stress can mean just normal and natural life stressors, such as, you know, like work can be stressful, financial difficulties, stressful. Illness is stressful. Relationship challenges, stressful. Stress of raising kids. Stress of having aging family members. The stress of experiencing just all the global problems, watching the news. So stress by itself is not technically bad. So stress, yes, can make you stronger. It can make you healthier. It can make you more resilient. So stress isn't bad. We're not saying stress is bad. But in excess, particularly when it's self-chosen stress, it can take us in the opposite direction of where we want to go. So, stated in another way, the bottom line is you could be eating the healthiest food in the known universe, but if you're not eating it under the optimal physiologic state, which happens to be the relaxation response, parasympathetic nervous system dominance, then you're actually not getting the full nutritional value of your meal. So in a stress response, you will literally be excreting nutrients, vitamins and minerals, excreting them. You'll be malabsorbing fat and protein, so you'll end up excreting a lot of that, and you'll be driven to eat more because the stress response, again, deregulates appetite. And in those conditions, your appetite is deregulated because of stress. We end up thinking that we have a willpower problem when it comes to food. Why do you think you have a willpower problem? Because you feel like you're driven to eat more. Like, oh my God, there's this driven energy. But it's not a willpower problem. It really isn't. You've got to get this through your head. It's not a willpower problem. I meet very few people who have a willpower problem. We have the problem of eating under stress, which is neurologically, biologically driving you to eat more. You got to relax. You have to relax and see the science behind this so you can understand that you're not defective, you're not deficient, there's not something wrong with you, you're not a willpower weakling, it's not your fault. You're learning how to be in a body. You're learning how to operate your body. You're learning how your body operates. You're learning how to be an eater. The dieting mentality that so many of us are in, the dieting mentality is trying to train you how not to be an eater, how not to eat. Dieting is essentially all, weight loss dieting I'm talking about, is all essentially about here's how you don't eat. Here's how you not eat. Here's how you resist eating. So chances are if you've been dieting for decades and that doesn't work and it hasn't worked for you sustainably, that's because training your body how not to eat doesn't work. It's about training your body how to eat. That's what we're learning here. So let's take a look at the relaxation response for a moment, also known as parasympathetic nervous system dominance. The physiologic relaxation response is the state under which all humans, every single human being, no exceptions, that's where we are designed to do our optimum digestion, assimilation, calorie burning, and that's where you're designed to express your most natural appetite regulation. By the way, the relaxation response is also the brain state under which you have access to the most wisdom, to the most cohesive and clear thinking, to the most foresight, to the most insight, to the most aha moments. The stress state is where you have quick instinctive thinking, quick survival thinking, very quick decisions that are made in a moment. Relaxation state is where you write the great novel or paint the great painting or think the great thought. So I want you to think of this as a simple on and off switch in the brain, which it essentially is. When stress is turned on, sympathetic nervous system is most activated and digestion, assimilation, natural appetite regulation is turned off. When the relaxation response is turned on, parasympathetic nervous system is most activated, and we have our fullest digestion, assimilation, and natural appetite regulation. So, how does this tie into emotional eating even more? Many of us who are emotionally eating are using food to actually remove ourselves from the stress response and put ourselves in a relaxation response. In other words, we're seeking pleasure, we're avoiding pain, we're seeking the pleasure of relaxation, and we're avoiding the pain of stress or uncomfortable emotions. See, when you have enough food in your belly, so you're in a stress response, you're actually not digesting in that moment, you're in a stress response, And once you eat enough, you have enough food in the belly, the body goes, oh my goodness, there's a lot of food in here. I need to be in a relaxation response in order to digest that food. So the body will shift at some point into parasympathetic nervous system dominance relaxation response. So you've likely noticed this, that when you eat enough food, you can become a couch potato. In other words, in order for the food to order for the body to digest a bunch of food in our belly, body has to be in the relaxation response. Remember, we're always seeking pleasure and avoiding pain. Stress is painful, eating pleasurable. So emotional eating is essentially using food to regulate the physiologic stress response. You're literally trying to regulate your body and its metabolism. You're trying to do what nature wants you to do, which is to get out of the stress response as soon as possible. Again, the stress response is designed to last 2 or 3 minutes. Body doesn't want to be in a stress response past that. So it wants you to do whatever you can do to relax. And what most people understand is the best thing I know to do to relax is to eat. So I need to just turn to food. So this is one of the brilliant reasons why we emotionally eat. We are trying to get out of the biological stress response because the brain doesn't want the body to be there because it's not a healthy place to be day in and day out. The stress response essentially day in and day out over time is unnecessary. It's not needed. And it actually will break the body down. It'll cause inflammation. It'll cause gut bacteria die off. It will decrease the amount of mitochondria in your cells. Those are the sort of the little powerhouses, the energy factories in your cells. It'll decrease, even if it doesn't decrease the number of mitochondria, it decreases their efficiency. So many ways that stress will impact the body. So it might be helpful here to better understand the connection between food and pleasure chemistry. Here's the thing. Pleasure, any experience of pleasure by itself, catalyzes the relaxation response. Pleasure by itself catalyzes the relaxation response. What does that mean? If you have a rough day at work, you come home, your partner gives you a shoulder rub, you take a deep breath, and you literally relax. So pleasure is hardwired to put us in a relaxation response. You feel pleasure when you're relaxed. When you're stressed, you're most sensitive to feeling pain. And think about it, that's how the body is wired. So if you're in a true full-blown stress response, you're running from a lion, you don't want to get sidetracked looking for a massage. You don't want to get sidetracked looking for a dessert, i.e. looking for pleasure. In fact, you want all your pain receptors active. You want to know, am I cut? Am I bleeding? Am I bruised? Am I being eaten in this moment? So pain receptors need to be very active. Pleasure receptors are not so important. So what's fascinating here is that any kind of stress blunts the body's pleasure receptors. Any kind of stress blunts the body's pleasure receptors. So that's largely due to cortisol. Cortisol will literally signal the body to not feel pleasure. What this means is that when we're stressed, it actually takes more food to give us the pleasure that we're seeking compared to a lesser amount of food that it would take if you ate that same food when you're relaxed. Did you follow that? That because stress blunts the body to pleasure, stress signals the body, don't feel pleasure. When you eat under stress, for any reason, any kind of stress that you're under, if you eat, you can't feel pleasure as easily. You can't feel pleasure as naturally. So your body's eating, you're eating the chocolate cake, you're eating the ice cream, you're eating the food, and your body goes, wait a second, I'm just not getting enough pleasure. So you're driven to eat more. Why? Because you're seeking pleasure and you're avoiding pain. You're eating the chocolate cake, you're eating the cookie, so you can feel pleasure. How do you feel pleasure? Your brain is telling you you're feeling pleasure. But when you're under stress, the brain is telling you you're not feeling pleasure. So the smart thing to do is eat more because then I'll feel pleasure. So eating under stress physiologically drives us to eat more so we can get the pleasure we're seeking. So I hope you're seeing the implications here. The implications here is that our task is to learn how to become relaxed eaters, to learn how to relax into the eating experience, to learn how to relax into any aspect of our relationship with food and body, because the more stress you're creating, if you're stressing yourself into trying to heal emotional eating, then you will be stressed. And when you do emotionally eat, you will need to eat more. You will feel more out of control. So let's talk about a kind of specific kind of stress that we've mentioned, but I want to break it down more. I want to talk about self-chosen stress. Self-chosen stress doesn't mean, you know, the natural family issues that are happening, the world stress challenges that we all face. Self-chosen stress can mean the way you speak to yourself. It can mean self-judgment. It can mean self-attack. It can mean harsh and unnecessary self-criticism. You know, there's a constant soundtrack playing in our minds that can run 24/7. I'm no good. I'm not lovable. I'm too fat. I eat too much. I'm a loser. Nobody's going to love me because of my weight. I hate myself. This is no good. I'm no good. I'm not perfect. I need to be perfect, but I can't be perfect. I'll never get where I want. All that. That I'm calling self-chosen stress. These silent statements are literal stressors. The brain does not distinguish between a real or an imagined threat. All stress is considered to some degree of this is a threat to me. So anytime your brain senses attack, if somebody's attacking you from the outside, you're going to go into a stress response. If you are self-attacking, you'll go into a stress response. By self-attacking, you know what I mean. Your own words, your own thoughts, your own deeds. You will literally go into sympathetic nervous system dominance, the fight or flight stress response with all the attendant features that happen. Decreased digestion and assimilation. That's going to impact the health of your body. It's going to give you digestive symptoms. Decreased appetite regulation. And decreased day-in, day-out calorie burning capacity. So you might think that your negative internal conversation can be harmless to you because nobody hears it but you. Yeah, I could just sweep this under the rug because nobody hears me berating myself. But your self-attacking thoughts have a literal and powerful and large metabolic cost. It could be a pretty profound cost for some of us. So not only do we use food and emotionally eating to get out of unwanted real-life stress, we're using emotional eating to escape from our own self-attacking thoughts, what I'm referring to as self-chosen stress. So you're following that? So, you know, here's the thing. You could have stress at work, and you come home and you emotionally eat, and understandable strategy. If I have a rough day at work, I'm going to open up the refrigerator and I'm going to look for a food that I like. Why? Because I'm hungry now, and I want a food that I like, and when I eat a food that I like, I relax. So that's emotional eating. That kind of works for me if I manage it. But if I'm creating my own self-chosen stress, you're no good, you're too fat, you're not lovable, you're not enough, you're not perfect, you're a loser. So that's creating stress. And you know something? That stress builds up. I don't like that stress. That stress is making me stressed out. It's making me an anxious monkey. And I have to relieve that stress. So what do we do to relieve the stress that we cause from self-attack? We emotionally eat. And we end up hating ourselves for emotionally eating. We feel guilt and shame, and that guilt and shame makes you feel terrible. So what do you do when you feel terrible? Eventually, you're going to want to reach for food again to get us out of those terrible and stressful emotions and thoughts. So it becomes a self-repeating cycle. The negative thoughts that we aim at ourselves, for example, for having extra weight or for eating something we think we should not have eaten, they cause us to want to eat more to get out of the pain of our own self-punishing thoughts. So hint, our ultimate job then is to notice that we do this and to change how we think, change how you talk to yourself. Our task is to turn our inner conversation into a kinder and gentler one. Because if not, then you're in a constant negative conversation. And you will somehow need to get out of that stress. And you will likely turn to your favorite strategy to get out of stress, which is to turn to food. Because it's such a good strategy because it works so well. It's so easy to do. So, reminder, no human being has ever successfully made themselves a happier person by using self-attack as a strategy for personal betterment. I'm just wanting you to see how the mind, how our inner conversation can drive us to do behaviors that go against our own best wishes. So the good news is, we have all the power to create a new way of speaking to ourselves. That's the good news. There's more here. I'd like to introduce another scientific principle that's going to help you better understand and transform emotional eating. The scientific principle, it's all about the cephalic phase digestive response. Cephalic phase digestive response. So this is a fancy term for taste, pleasure, aroma, satisfaction, and the visuals you get of a meal. Cephalic means of the head. So cephalic phase digestive response is essentially the head phase of digestion. So for example, when you look at a food, just look at a food and your mouth starts to water, that's digestion beginning in the mind with saliva and salivary amylase being secreted in the mouth. When you think about your favorite food and you feel your stomach start to churn, that's peristalsis beginning in your gut. Also the cephalic phase digestive response. Now, what's fascinating, scientists say that approximately 40 to 60% of our digestive and assimilative power at any meal comes from this head phase of digestion, your awareness essentially of the meal. So the cephalic phase digestive response greatly contributes to appetite regulation. When you receive taste, pleasure, aroma, satisfaction, your brain understands, I've eaten. But when we miss the head phase of digestion, brain gets confused. It essentially says, even if your stomach is full, you could have a stomach full of food and your stomach feels distended, but your brain is saying, I don't remember eating. I don't recall getting taste and pleasure. I haven't been satisfied. And what does the brain do? It screams, hungry. And then we're driven to eat more. And then we think we have a willpower problem, but what we really have is an awareness problem. We were not present when we were eating. You were not awake at the plate. Now, here's where the stress response and the cephalic phase digestive response have an interesting synergy. The majority of times when we emotionally eat, we're eating fast. We do the deed quickly. Few people will emotionally eat in a slow, relaxed, aware, and sensuous way. So the challenge is that when you emotionally eat fast, this will drive you to eat even more. Because the pleasure we're seeking from emotional eating isn't fully registering, meaning the cephalic phase digestive response is like a requirement that's not being satisfied. So we literally confuse the brain when we eat fast because the brain thinks it hasn't eaten. And what does it do? Once again, when the brain thinks it hasn't eaten, it signals hungry. Additionally, when we eat fast, even if you're relaxed, you could be the most perfectly relaxed person. And if you sit down and you eat a meal quickly, the body automatically goes into a stress response because fast eating is considered by the brain, by the body, by your genetics, by evolution, fast eating is considered to be a stressor. That is just how you're wired. There's reasons for that in nature. But point being that if you're eating fast, it's going to deregulate your appetite. And once again, we're driven to eat more, and then we think we have a willpower problem, and then we feel like we're losers, and we're not. We just didn't truly eat in the first place. You're learning how to be an eater on planet Earth. You're learning how to work with your biology, to work with your intelligent design, to work with how life, with how nature, with how evolution, with how a higher power, whatever you believe in, you're learning how to work with how you are brilliantly designed. So the combination of unaware eating and fast eating synergizes to create far less pleasure from food, less stress reduction from food, from emotional eating, which is what you're looking for, and even more of an appetite. Now, remember how we identified that we'll use emotional eating to get us out of the stress response. So this highlights how the majority of unwanted emotional eating happens to some degree during a stress response. If you emotionally eat, 98% chance you're in a stress response. So the key to managing and downsizing your emotional eating is to actually slow down when you emotionally eat. See the correlation here? The key to managing and downsizing your emotional eating is to relax, to taste, to receive pleasure, to eat slowly, to eat sensually. This will help you enter the relaxation response much quicker. It will help you satisfy the brain's desire for the cephalic phase of eating, taste, pleasure, nourishment, etc. And it'll help you naturally and more easily regulate your appetite so you don't overdo it when you emotionally eat. Let's say this in another way. The faster you eat, the more you will eat. Tons of research on that. Faster you eat, the more you will eat. Period. Conversely, the more you stay aware, the more you stay awake, the more you stay present in the moment that you're emotionally eating, the moments that you're emotionally eating, the more you train the mind and the body to have greater control of that experience, to have greater command of that experience. You're strengthening a muscle. So let's put this all together in a practical way. I have two more practices for you this week when it comes to transforming emotional eating. These are both extremely powerful, and I consider them lifelong practices that will have an impact not just on emotional eating, but when it comes to finding your natural weight, having optimum digestion and assimilation, i.e. health, the least amount of unwanted symptoms from eating, as well as your best and most natural appetite regulation. And natural weight means your best and most natural calorie burning capacity. So here's the first practice. Eat slow whenever you emotionally eat. Whenever you emotionally eat, eat slow. Slow down. This is actually designed, this practice is designed to help you get what you want when you're emotionally eating. I'm not telling you to do something that's going against your best wishes. Why are you emotionally eating? You're emotionally eating to get pleasure, to get stress reduction, to get rid of unwanted, uncomfortable emotions through receiving pleasure through the food. Feel bad, eat food, feel better. So eating slow when you emotionally eat signals your body to go into a relaxation response. Eating fast when you emotionally eat signals the body to go into it signals your body to go into a stress response. And that stress response will actually have you emotionally eating even more. So what do you want when you emotionally eat? You want pleasure. You want to feel good. You want to give you a sense of relief and fun and bliss and let go. Well, as we've seen, you actually can't get those benefits from food if you're eating fast and you're not paying attention to your food. Eating fast and without awareness, by definition, means you will need more food to give you the pleasure that you're seeking compared to if you ate that food in a relaxed, aware, slow, and pleasured pace. So I'm actually asking you to effectively get the thing you want from food in the times when you make the choice to emotionally eat. The key here is to accept and relax into the fact that there will be times when you emotionally eat. You will not choose to do something else in that moment to regulate your emotions. Yeah, there's going to be times when you're going to say, okay, I want to do the practices like who's eating in this moment and how old am I being? And let's do the what else thing. What else can I do other? And you just end up emotionally eating. So what I would like you to do is to use that to your advantage. Choose to emotionally eat in that moment. At such times, I like for you to literally make the conscious choice. I am now about to emotionally eat. Say that to yourself. Anytime you emotionally eat, I am choosing to emotionally eat. Own it. Choose to do the thing you're going to do anyways. This is really important. Choose with your mind and your words, choose to do the thing that you're going to do anyway. Because when you're choosing the thing, choosing to do the thing that you're going to do anyway, and you're saying, I'm choosing to do this, it actually helps you strengthen your choosing muscle. And ultimately helps you have more momentum and more personal power when you want to choose to not emotionally eat. So you're choosing to do the thing that you're doing anyways, which means you're staying awake. You're not going to sleep. Now, eating slow doesn't just mean a speed. When I say eating slow, I'm talking about a speed, but I'm talking far more than a speed. Eating slow means you're in your experience, you're receiving taste, you're receiving pleasure, you're receiving nourishment, you're feeling satisfaction. Consider eating slow a sensual experience. Make love to the food. Make it last. Indulge your senses. Get the thing you want. And make it last by not going unconscious and eating so fast. If something is truly pleasurable, if you truly want pleasure from something, then you don't want to get it over really quick. You just want to make pleasure last. Once you can do this even once, I want you to note the difference in your emotional eating experience. Once you have an emotional eating experience where you say, okay, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to relax. I know I'm going to emotionally eat, so I'm going to choose to do it anyway. I'm choosing to do this thing that I'm going to do. Let me just taste this cookie. Let me smell it. Let me enjoy it. Let me savor it. I want you to notice what you feel afterwards. Perhaps you might be satisfied more. Did you end up eating less food? That's what usually happens. Might there be any insights or aha moments that happen when you do that? So again, by eating slow, by slowing down the emotional eating experience, you're also learning to not go dark with yourself. Because think of it, majority of the time when we emotionally eat, a part of us checks out. The adult checks out. The king, the queen, the royalty in you checks out. The parent in you checks out. The wise person in you checks out. Part of us leaves our body. Adios. By eating slowly and sensually and with presence and awareness and taking in the experience, you're checking back into your body. You're giving yourself the ability to have more power and more control in the moment. The only way you're going to have control and power in the moment is if you're present, if you're absent, if you're checked out, and you're letting the little kid in you run the show. Yeah, little kid in you is going to run the show. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to eat fast. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And this is going to help you in future moments. It's going to help strengthen that choosing muscle. This is such a powerful practice. It's not easy. It's not always easy. It's not going to come easy to you because we are habitually conditioned to check out when we do something that we think is bad for us. When you do something you think is bad for you, you don't want to be present to it. You just want to check out and let some other part of you do that. So you're training yourself how to stay checked in. And this is just not going to feel comfortable because it's a new habit. You haven't been doing that. You normally emotionally eat and you do it fast because it's a crime. It's considered by the mind to be a crime. I shouldn't be doing this. I know I'm not supposed to do it, but I want to do it, but I shouldn't do it, but I want to do it. Oh, too confusing. Just do it really fast. When you slow it down, you automatically begin to relax. You get satiated quicker, so you don't have to eat as much. You're going to feel better about yourself. And you're training your mind. You're training yourself to better regulate your emotions. You're training your body to relax By the way, all healing, maintenance, and repair of body tissue happens in a relaxation response. When you're sick, or you think you're getting sick, what do? You go lie down on the couch. You don't say, hey, I'm feeling like I might get sick. I'm going to go run around and stress myself out. You don't do that. You instinctively know healing happens when I'm relaxed or when I'm sleeping. Because your body's in a relaxation response, that's when it does healing, maintenance, and repair of body tissue. Healing of the heart and the mind and the soul and the emotions, healing of trauma, happens in a relaxation response. You don't heal the wounds of life by saying, okay, let me go punish myself. Let me go be angry at myself. Let me go stress myself out. Let me berate myself. Let me speak ill of myself. No, healing moments happen when intimacy happens. That's relaxation response. When love happens, that's relaxation response. When good healing vacation time happens, that's relaxation response. When you're out in nature, relaxation response. When you do any type of mind-body practice, yoga, breathing, helps you go into relaxation response. So you're training your body to slow down. Training the mind to slow down. Okay, for your final new practice for this week and for the rest of your life as well, I'd like for you to practice this same slowing down, this same relaxed eating, but at all times that you eat, meaning any meal, any snack, I am asking you to practice relaxed, slow eating. Why? Because that's learning how to be an eater. That's what an eater does. That's how you, if you want optimum, yeah, you could, remember, you could eat the most healthiest food in the universe. You could eat all, whatever you think is healthy. You could be eating it. And if you're not under the optimum state of digestion, assimilation, and calorie burning, and natural appetite regulation, you will not be receiving the nutritional value of that meal. You'll literally be excreting or malabsorbing the nutritional value of that meal. Some of it. Because you're not in the optimum state to receive that meal. So nutritional science has unfortunately focused on the food alone. What you eat, the what of what you eat, that's half the story of good nutrition. So what you eat, eat this, don't eat that, that's half the story of good nutrition. The other half of the story of good nutrition is who you are as an eater. How you're eating. You got to be in the optimum physiologic state that you were designed to digest, assimilate, absorb that food, let that food be used for energy, let that food create the building blocks of your body. And that all happens in the state of relaxation. Ask yourself, am I a fast eater, a moderate eater, or a slow eater? If you are not a slow eater, that's your job in life. Slowly train yourself to be a slow eater. So, once again, this is going to help you learn how to regulate your appetite in a natural way. So you're not fighting yourself. You're not forcing yourself. You're not struggling with yourself. So many people feel like their appetite is out of control because they're fighting food. And fighting food, a fight, is stressful. And when you're stressed, you're going to want to eat more. So the truth is, if you want to transform any eating challenge, if you want to transform overeating, binging, emotional eating, weight, you must learn to create a relaxation response when you eat. Another way of saying that is we have to learn how to make peace with food. Making peace with food, that's a big relaxation response. Being peaceful inside myself when I eat, that's relaxation response. Being present and awake creates a relaxation response, present and awake to your meal. So if you want, people say, you know, I just want peace with food. I get it. You do want peace with food. And you know how you get peace with food? You literally create it. You don't wait for the peace train to come because it hasn't. If you want peace with food, you literally create it. All peace of any kind is experienced when we are in the physiologic relaxation response. That's just fact. If you're in a stress response, you are not in peace. There are many times during the day or the week or the month or the year or our life where naturally we're going to be stressed because there's stressful things happening in life and in the world. So yeah, it's good to learn how to better manage those stresses, how to better regulate those stresses. It is especially helpful to learn how to let go of self-chosen stress. Stress that is optional, stress that is not needed, stress that is not necessary. The stress called eating fast, so eating fast creates a stress response. That stress is not needed. You don't need it. You could unwind that. So if you want peace with food, you create the relaxation response where peace lives as best you can. And you do the best you can. You're not going to have perfect peace. This is not about that. This is about having more peace. This is about eliminating stress where it is not needed or necessary. Having peace with food means creating the neurologic state of peace when you eat, relaxation. It means creating peace in your relationship with food. It means calling a ceasefire when it comes to self-attacking thoughts. So practically, eating slow at every meal means sensuous, means take time, give yourself more time. If you normally eat breakfast in 2 minutes and lunch in 7 minutes and dinner in 15 minutes, just bump it up by 30, 40, or 50, or 60%. Just give yourself more time. Like literally, look at the clock and say, I'm going to take 15 minutes for breakfast and 20 minutes, whatever it is. You know, research shows that it takes the body approximately 20 minutes to realize it's full. So that means that your body needs to do a lot of talking. Your head brain and your gut brain, the enteric nervous system, they need to be in dialogue. Head brain and gut brain are scanning the body when you're eating a meal. They're scanning the nutrient properties of the food that you've eaten. Head brain and gut brain are determining, did I get the nutrition that I need from this meal? Micronutrition, vitamins and minerals, macronutrition, protein, fat, carbohydrates, water. And those two brains are talking to each other. And it's a good 15, 20 minute conversation. So in other words, the body needs time to naturally regulate its appetite. So you can practice slow, relaxed eating, you know, support yourself, play some sweet, relaxing music when you eat. If you're at home, sit in a favorite spot when you eat. Sit. Don't be running around. Use your favorite plate or mug or create some kind of ritual. Candles in the evening time, whatever gives you a sense of pleasure and relaxation, make it a ritual so you can begin to find peace with food. What a beautiful thing. What a beautiful way to be in relationship with yourself and relationship with your body. And what you're doing is you're changing a habit pattern that the world has given you. The world has told you, move at a high speed, fast internet, fast cars, fast commercials, everything's fast. Give me quick Facebook videos and quick TikTok, fast, fast, fast. And okay, we're moving too fast sometimes. And there are certain places where we might need to slow down. And if you face the challenge of emotional eating, then emotional eating is asking you to slow down. Life is asking you to slow down. This challenge is asking you to slow down. And slowing down again means you being more present, more here, more awake, not checking out, checking in, not going dark, staying in the light. When you do that, you begin to naturally and more easily and more effortlessly heal your emotional eating. Because you're learning how to be an eater. And you're discovering the simplicity of it, the beauty of it, the naturalness of it. And there's a part of you that begins to take over. It's a part of you that's going to feel more empowered, part of you that's going to feel more embodied, the part of you that just feels, yes, I'm doing what's right for me. I'm doing what's natural for me. I'm working with how my body and how my mind and how my emotions are designed. Your body is designed to eat in a relaxation state. It's designed to regulate its appetite in a relaxation state. Your body is designed to best calorie burn day in and day out in a relaxation state. So not during your 1 hour. Yes, you're a lean, mean calorie burning machine in your 1 hour of exercise, but you burn the majority of your calories in the other 23 hours. Find a little more peace at that time. My friends, we have covered a lot in this week's session. You have some great exercises, some great practices to begin this week. I've no doubt that these will make a huge difference on your journey to transform emotional eating. And it's a journey. You're on a journey. Celebrate that. Acknowledge that. Feel okay about it. Bless the old part of your journey. See the goodness in it. You're learning how to rewrite your story. You're learning how to use things other than food to regulate your emotions. You're learning how to become an eater. What a beautiful thing. So as always, I appreciate you putting your time, your energy, your effort into your own benefit, your own personal transformation. Just please continue to be good to yourself on this journey. Stay with yourself. Be your own best friend. Transformation happens when you do the work, when you do the practices that you're learning. The work on self you're doing is opening the door to real and lasting breakthroughs. So, my friends, this concludes session number 3 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough. So many good things to consider. I'll see you in the next session.